From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
The Bears have been proud to call Chicago home for more than 100 years. Perhaps no other sports team embodies the character of the city it represents better than the Bears in Chicago. That is why we are excited to invest in the greatest city in the world through a stadium project and site improvements that will benefit Chicagoans and visitors.
There are aspects of this that are, you know, probably non-starters. Having said that, you know, always open to a conversation, but as I've said, the priorities of the people of Illinois are not building stadiums.
Well, there is skepticism about public money that could help pay for a new Chicago Bears stadium. We heard from Governor Pritzker there. And we also heard from Bears Chairman George McCaskey in that clip. The Bears have announced that new dome stadium proposal this week. We'll discuss that. Also, the governor hints that Illinois should consider more changes to public employee pensions. That's coming up here on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Professor Emeritus and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie's also been a longtime State House reporter and observer. And with us, we have Hannah Meisel, a reporter with Capital News Illinois. Hannah, it's always good to have you back with us.
Thanks for having me, Sean.
Charlie, I'll go to you first because you've been watching the Bears a lot longer than Hannah or myself, so we'll ask you about this. The new lakefront proposal from the Chicago Bears, a dome stadium. This is not a surprise. We've been hearing this now for quite a while. It would replace Soldier Field, make some changes, I guess tear down a lot of Soldier Field. It looks nice and all, but there is a rub, the nearly $5 billion price tag, and the Bears have mentioned that they'd like for taxpayers to cover a significant chunk of that. So what do you think so far, Charlie?
Well, I think if I were a betting person, I would stake all my money on the Bears not getting what they're asking for a lot of different reasons. One, it looks nice and shiny and bright and all that, although I think it looks really out of place in the museum setting. It kind of dwarfs like the Field Museum and the Planetarium and the Shed. But the bigger thing is they're asking for quite a bit of state money. They require, I believe, something like $325 million in public funding for the initial infrastructure upgrades. And so they're asking for that at the same time as the state has a lot of other asks, if you will, that are probably more important, at least in my judgment, for the people of the state of Illinois. One of the things, for example, housing advocates, and Hannah, I believe you've written about that, want another $20 million for affordable housing tax credit that they say would create something like 1,000 new affordable units in the first few years. Educating migrant kids, the State Board of Education has asked for something like $35 million more for this than what was in the governor's budget. Advocates are saying it's probably closer to $200 million just for the Chicago public schools and the suburbs. Chicago public schools itself faces a shortfall of almost $400 million, and they need something like $1 billion to reach adequacy under the evidence-based funding. And they have like $3 billion worth of critical building repairs that are needed. And I could go on. The ask, I think, is going to get a very cool reception. As a matter of fact, the governor has pretty much said thumbs down. Speaker Welch has said that this isn't going to happen, that if they were to put it up for a vote now, it would fail miserably. And Senate President Harmon is not on board either. So I think it's really, you know, they had this nice glitzy presentation with Mr. McCaskey and with the mayor and all the flashy stuff, and it looked all so cool and all that. But I would say that it's not going to happen, and it's certainly not going to happen in the next 4 weeks, which is the scheduled end of the spring session.
Now, I will take a little bit of exception there with what Charlie said. I listened back to, again, what some of these legislative leaders, other lawmakers have said, and Hannah, I know you have as well. they were pretty skeptical. They were pretty much, you know, saying, we don't know that this is the priority. But they also seem to leave the door open a little bit. And maybe that's just politics, you know, the way they do it. But it didn't strike me that it was a slam the door. The door is still ajar there for the Bears. Is that a good way to put it?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, listen, I don't know that there is any serious talk of the Bears leaving Chicago, but, you know, it would be not good if the Bears ever left the Chicago area. Of course, you know, the Bears also, 3 years ago, they bought the former Arlington Racecourse. They spent a chunk of money to raise it to the ground, and now there's just a giant hole. And the Bears, you know, have at least temporarily abandoned their plans to build their giant dome stadium there. And I think a lot of local leaders are pretty irritated about that. And a lot of people look at this plan and say, you know, this would fit in a lot better out in the suburbs. I think, yes, do a lot of people want to keep the Bears in the city of Chicago? Of course. But I think a lot of people also recognize that, you know, a lot of major sports franchises don't necessarily play in the city that they're named for anymore. And that's, you know, due to space constraints. And that the fact that if Chicago ever did want to play host to a Super Bowl, you would need a much, much better, bigger stadium. You would need a dome stadium, because we've all experienced what Chicago feels like in February, in early February. I don't think that they're closing the door quite yet. I mean, like, there could be a small bit of state money. I mean, we did have this massive infrastructure plan, you know, that we passed 5 years ago. State money goes to private entities, you know, all of the time, frankly. If it were to be a good deal for the state, and, you know, economic impact estimates are always, you know, way inflated, often way off. But, you know, certainly there is economic impact. And especially if you could prove that over the long term, it would be a good deal for taxpayers. You'd get more in tax coffers than you would be putting out. Then, you know, it's possible.
The notion that, I think it was Mayor Lightfoot, was very skeptical about the Bears moving to Arlington Heights and say, well, who's going to think of the Arlington Heights Bears? Well, I would point out that the New York Giants and the New York Jets don't even play in the state of New York. They play in MetLife Stadium in East Rutherford, New Jersey. So the idea, if the Bears move to Arlington Heights, which I think is a better deal, and I suspect the reason the Bears aren't going to do it is because they're grousing about the fact that they might have to pay more than they would like for the local school districts. But the notion of them being able to get legislative approval to move forward this, as I say, I think it's somewhere less than zero. Plus, even if the legislature signs off, it's going to take a while, because there will be a suit filed by the Friends of the Park so that this monstrosity doesn't get plucked down right on the lakefront. So, as I say, I don't think it's going to happen.
Well, we'll continue to watch that. We did want to mention it because it happened this week, but we'll probably be talking about this again at some point here over the next few weeks. Let's move on to another story. And Hannah, you covered this. Always interesting, and something that I've been hearing about for years, ever since what is known as the Tier 2 pension plan went into effect for state employee pensions. And you can give us all the history of it, but you know, there are people that are longtime state workers, myself included. I'm in the state university retirement system. Charlie's now a retiree. We fall under what's known as Tier 1, but for those that aren't aware of this, the state made some adjustments, and Tier 2 was put into place. It's a little less generous of pension benefits. Now the governor is saying that maybe it's not generous enough. So fill us in on what's going on there.
Yeah, this is an issue that's kind of been quietly festering, especially these last few years, or maybe even longer, I would say. Basically, back in 2010, you know, I wasn't there yet. I arrived in Springfield in 2013, but to another, you know, a bigger pension issue. But back in 2010, you know, we were facing the slow recovery from the Great Recession. you know, stock market downturns meant that pension investment returns were way, way down. You had just had a few years of, frankly, irresponsible fiscal management by the Blagojevich administration. And finally, these credit rating agencies, which seemed to be kind of asleep on the job during a lot of the growth, you know, not just in Illinois, but all over the place, you know, before the housing bubble burst, these credit agencies seemed to kind of wake up and they saw Illinois' finances for what they were finally. And, you know, they said downgrade, 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 which, of course, makes borrowing more expensive. So faced with that, Mike Madigan, then Speaker of the House, Pat Quinn, they, one of the few times, I guess, of the cooperation, they quickly passed through this tier two pension plan, which said that state workers, teachers, university employees, et cetera, who started their jobs after January 1st, 2011, their pension benefits are going to be much lower. The major issue here is it takes 10 years to vest in the pension system to, you know, get full benefits. And so finally, we're seeing people who made a late career switch to public employment, which is a bit rare, you know, retiring on these benefits. And it's very possible that, especially for the highest earners, what they would have earned in Social Security, because, of course, if you're contributing to the pension system, you're not also contributing to Social Security. What you would have earned in Social Security is higher than what you would earn in your pension. And that is actually illegal under federal law. There's something called a Social Security safe harbor, and you are not supposed to earn less in a what's called a retirement replacement plan. For, I don't know, the last several years, you've had lawmakers studying this issue kind of quietly, kind of coming to a bit of a consensus that, like, hey, we do probably need to do something. Still, it's not really clear how big the problem is because, you know, we can't see it in real time quite yet, but acknowledging that there is going to be a coming issue. And, you know, if there's a big lawsuit filed somewhere here down the line, and the state is found to be violating federal law, then you're going to be forced to fix it. And that could be more expensive. But it's been very interesting because I don't remember that the governor has ever been asked this, at least directly. So kudos to Brendan Moore of Lee Enterprises for asking the governor this last week. Coincidentally, there was also a whole hearing on this issue earlier that day, last Thursday. So I had begun writing a story. And then after the governor made his comments that the state probably does, quote, obviously need to address the two pensions, I rewrote my story, at least the first half. But, you know, I've also been talking to organized labor folks, and organized labor, I don't, you know, 10 years ago when I arrived in Springfield, this coalition of organized labor who called themselves We Are One Illinois, they were the ones who had mobilized against the big SB1, the big quote unquote pension reform back in 2013 that would have affected, pay, you know, pension benefits for tier oneers. Of course, the Illinois Supreme Court in 2015 eventually, you know, unanimously struck down that law, you know, this lawsuit filed by the We Are One Coalition. But they kind of rose themselves from the dead this past week or last week to have this week of action. The two big teachers unions in Illinois, IFT and IEA, they had encouraged their members to send emails and calls to legislators. And I believe that at the end of it, they ended up with 55,000 emails to legislators, which far surpassed the expectations of this kind of campaign and kind of applied some pressure. But the thing is, these labor unions, their aim is not just fixing the pension safe harbor, because they say that all of the pension benefits writ large under tier two are just not a good deal. And it really is affecting workforce development for state government, for teachers, because, you know, there's just not that incentive that used to exist anymore, that you yes, you would work for less than your peers in the private sector, but you had this promise of a good retirement coming to you, and that's just no longer true.
Now, Charlie, you heard Hannah go back on all of the history of this and everything else. What do you think about this Tier 2? And we've talked about it in the past, but a lot of people may not remember, and a lot of people aren't that up to date on how the pension system works. But is this something that may be coming at some point?
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear, as Hannah indicated, at some point we're going to have to adjust Tier 2 so that it conforms with the safe harbor provisions of federal law, so that if you're retiring under Tier 2, your benefits would be at least comparable to what you would get under Social Security. And the difficulty, as I've said many times, isn't anything that's new. This has been going on basically since day one. There was a report that came out, I think it was in 1916, so more than 100 years ago, by the Pension Laws Commission of the General Assembly. And the bottom line in that is that the condition of the pension systems that are now operating can be described as being insolvent. There is not enough reserves to carry out the payment of the promised pensions. So this is a problem, as I say, from day one. The benefits were there, but because of other pressing matters, immediate matters, legislators for the last century have not wanted to put away the amount of money needed to be able to pay for the benefits that pensioners or people in the pension systems earned in that particular year. And so this is an ongoing problem, and it's going to be very costly to fix. And I think, Hannah, in your story, you mentioned that to bring the Tier 2 in conformancy with Social Security rules, it would cost something like $5.5 billion through 2045, or about $255 million a year. So that's going to be a big hit. And I think one of the things that the employees are looking for, the teachers union and others, is they don't want the Tier 2 to be reformed just to meet Social Security. They're looking for more than that.
Charlie, I want to say, like, that's one analysis. There's going to have to be probably several more analysis done, and it might be even too early to do so. You know, the governor has all of these other plans that he proposed in February to get Illinois' pensions shored up more generally. And, you know, having to acknowledge that there is a problem with Tier 2 kind of interferes, kind of would set back the progress that he wants to make. And it was interesting that when he gave his answer that, yes, the state obviously needs to fix Tier 2, he also called it, said multiple times the word sweeteners, which I think organized labor would bristle at, especially in context with fixing Tier 2, the Social Security issue. But in general, I think they would bristle at calling anything a sweetener, because their idea of a sweetener is, you know, the things like pension spiking that used to be so very common. But all they're asking for, as you said, Charlie, is to bring Tier 2 pensions back in line a little bit with Tier 1.
And Charlie, just real quick on this, I think some people might wonder, why doesn't the state just use the Social Security system and pay into that? Why couldn't they go that route?
Well, and there are some state employees who do pay into Social Security, not a whole lot, and teachers don't, by and large, university employees don't. And I think, and this was a decision that was made before my time, I believe it was basically because if you're an employer and your employees are covered by Social Security, you have to make those FICA payments month after month, year after year. You can't take a, quote, pension holiday, as we did back in Blagojevich's time. You have no choice. The federal government will make you do that. And so when you don't want to put the money up front, it's easier to say, well, we'll take care of it. We'll run our own system, and Social Security, don't worry about us. And we can go by and keep shortchanging the system for 100 years and then wind up with the kind of situation we have today where the pension payment is a huge portion of the annual budget. It's in, I don't know the exact number, I don't have it before me, but it's one of the largest expenditures that the state makes every year from its budget is to pay the retirement systems what they're entitled to under the 1995 agreement. And even that isn't what is what would be needed to cover the benefits earned by a person working in the system for this year.
Well, just a few minutes left here, but I did want to get to another story. Hannah, you covered this interesting story involving a tribal nation now being federally recognized, some property in northern Illinois. Fill us in on this.
The Prairie Band Potawatomi Nation has been effectively out of Illinois since around 1850. You know, this is part of the larger Potawatomi Nation that, you know, in treaties, the 20 years before then, in the 1830s and a little bit before, had ceded their land, but they were supposed to maintain basically what's the equivalent of a 2-square-mile piece of land in DeKalb County. And when Chief Chauvenet went to check that the rest of his tribe that had bought this 30 by 30 square mile reservation in Kansas after they were basically removed, forced out of Illinois, that they were settling in okay, that's when the federal government swooped in and, you know, sold his, actually moved his house. Other people were living in his house when he came back. And when he tried to fight this through the court systems, the court said, you abandon your land, your home, so fair game. And ever since then, you know, the Prairie Band Potawatomi has been kind of relegated to Kansas, for the most part, also Missouri. They had also split, some had gone up to Canada. But anyway, fast forward to modern times, the Prairie Band Potawatomi had about 30 years ago, maybe a little bit more before then, started this effort to get their land back in Illinois. Because as you can imagine, you grow up and you hear the story of your land being forced out, you know, sold out from under you by the federal government, and this land that you had never seen or, you know, you still feel connected to. And so starting about 20 years ago, the tribe in three separate purchases in, I think, 2004, 2006, and then again, not again until 2019, the tribe had bought three separate parcels of land that made up 130 acres in DeKalb County. They spent $10 million on it, and they had gone to the federal government and said, like, hey, we want to be recognized. We want, you know, what other tribes have, which is to sign over this land. The land is then put in a trust, and then the tribe has sovereignty over it. And it's a, you know, federally recognized tribal nation. Due to a Supreme Court decision in 2020, finally conditions were favorable to the Prairie Band tribe. And last year they, I guess, resubmitted their application. They were last Friday, I believe, the U.S. Department of the Interior granted it. The tribe's chairman signed over the land. But it is deeply, deeply ironic, of course, that the federal government that had once sold the land out from under them illegally are the ones that, you know, they have to sign the land back over to after spending this $10 million. But you know, this is probably just the beginning. Mark Walker, Representative Mark Walker of Arlington Heights, he has this bill that would actually sign the deed to Chauvenet State Park, which is named for Chief Chauvenet, in the DeKalb County area, sign it over to the tribe. And that would encompass a lot of the original tribe's land, that 2 square miles that was left to it. that's still pending, but Representative Walker has said that he's confident that it's going to get out before the end of session. So we'll watch for that. But it was very, very interesting to see this tribe finally, you know, fight for this and finally get it.
All right. Well, let's go to our notes from the field. And Charlie, we'll start with you this week.
Well, the state is about to embark on a program that would provide debt relief for people who have medical bills. And in essence, what it would be is the state would invest $10 million for the coming fiscal year, according to the governor. And that will provide $1 billion in medical debt relief for some 340,000 Illinois residents. And this is going to be a multi-year plan. And Governor Pritzker says that over the next 4 years, we would be able to eliminate $1 billion of medical debt. And you might say to yourself, well, how does that work? Basically, the way it works, and this has been done in Cook County already, is that there's an organization called Undo Medical Debt, which buys debt in large bundles from providers like hospitals, physician groups, collection agencies, debt buyers, et cetera, millions of dollars at a time for a fraction of the face value. So in essence, they pay a penny on the dollar, and then they will use their power to erase these debts for the folks. And they say that they've erased roughly $12 billion in medical debt for more than 7.5 million people in the time that they've been at work. And this is a program, as I say, they've done it in Cook County, and Cook County has abolished almost $350 million for 200,000 Cook County residents in the last couple of years.
And Hannah.
Way back in the fall of 2020, when there was this deadly, horrendous outbreak of COVID at the LaSalle Veterans Home, and ultimately 36 residents there died. Well, you know, the following spring, there was all of these lawsuits that were filed. And just last month, a judge said, no, these have to be fought in the, you know, state civil court system instead of as the state would have preferred, the Illinois Court of Claims. And so this month, the last of the lawsuits were moved to from the Court of Claims to civil court. We'll proceed from there. So a long road to go for a lot of these families, but it'll be very interesting to see what happens there, especially given, you know, we have kind of a parallel back in 2015, what happened with the Quincy Veterans Home, the Legionnaires outbreak, and the ultimate, you know, what happened there was the state settled.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler and Capital News Illinois' Hannah Meisel. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford, and join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.